And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And it's update week.
Yes, tons of stuff going on. So let's just jump right into it. So Soma has the recap on Visual Studio 2013 Update 2.
Right, so this is Visual Studio 2013 Update 2. It's Team Foundation Server 2013 Update 2. It's also TypeScript 10RC. And we should break each one of these down a little bit. The first thing to point out is that you should not be installing the Visual Studio release on your production box. So the day-to-day machine that you use for your development environment, this is not a go-live release. So let's just get that limitation out of the way.
Community Technology Preview.
It is a CTP. So put it on a test VM and take it for a spin. Team Foundation Server, on the other hand, you can install in a production box. It does have a go-live release. It'll be supported for the final upgrade to RTM. So there's a lot of great features and capabilities in here. Some of my favorites include any of the new capabilities that you've seen on Visual Studio Online, like the work item tag querying, like the ability for you to pin your charts to the homepage. Those first showed up in Visual Studio Online. Now those are available in Team Foundation Server. In the client side, in Visual Studio side, there's been a lot of great changes to the things like IntelliTrace debugging and the ability to step through code that exists in the .NET framework, which we'll talk a little bit later about. Also, you can now see all of your, you know, the diagnostics hub where you can profile your apps.
Sure.
You can see all of the various counters that you might be interested in, battery life, CPU usage, all in one location. So lots of really nice fit and finish features showing up in this release.
Sweet. So just drilling into one of the different topics is TypeScript 1.0. So a lot of people ask kind of what, they're still in the what is TypeScript phase.
Sure.
So TypeScript, what it allows you to do is it spits out JavaScript, so it works on any page. The end result is JavaScript that's generated for you, but it's a TS extension, and that file allows you to have more, I'd say, object-oriented features for JavaScript. So things like, for example, I can define, like I have a class, I can have things like be able to set something public or private, be able to use things like generics.
Yep.
And a number of different enhancements. So, and we have a number of people that are using TypeScript. So whether
Monaco.
It's Visual Studio Online, mm-hmm. Xbox Music and Video is using them today. So there's a number, and this is Jonathan Turner's post, where he goes through the specifics in terms of what really you need to do if you've been using some of the latest releases. There are language changes, right? So some of the way that they're using generics, and to be able to use generics in a way that still conforms, like being able to define something as a shape and then use the any type to kind of say that it could also be any. Mm-hmm. So go through some of the is examples if you have existing code. So they're calling it 1.0 RC. If you're a developer and you go look at their source code, I think it's 297 or
0.97. Yeah.
Yeah.
0.97. Yes.
Yes. 0.9.7. Just so you don't get confused,
right.
that means 1.0 RC.
But this is not a go live release, which
this
is a little confusing, which is why we're making a big point of it today. So you should wait until the RTM release to actually put this on a production server.
Sure. So lots of cool stuff with TypeScript. So Scott Gu has a great recap on all the different announcements around Windows Azure. So first one is ExpressRoute. So that's the idea of, hey, if I want to be able to have a almost like a dedicated line, if you will, between Azure and my company, I can do that. So normally we have site-to-site VPN as a mm-hmm. feature that anybody can do. ExpressRoute is really almost more like the cabling option. So in site-to-site VPN, you can now say ExpressRoute and do that. And that is in a preview. Dedicated networking, website backup restore. I mean, there's just so much stuff just to hit on some of these. But website backup restore, so the ability of me to basically take my website and be able to back it up or restore it from a certain file. So it's kind of like, it's not source control, but kind of a different way. If you want to back up all the assets, things within a Windows Azure website, you can do that. Mobile services for .NET is huge. So the idea is I can actually build .NET mobile services. So today, or before this, you'd be using JavaScript mm-hmm. as your mobile services backend using, say, Node.js. With this announcement, you as a .NET developer can use what you know and love, which is basically a full web API to be do that. So if you're a web developer and you choose web API, that API can now be hosted in .NET Mobile Services. And you get the advantage of now it's all the pain and all the hosting stuff is taken care of for you in .NET Mobile Services. And you also get all the features that .NET Mobile Services has that you can take advantage of. So data, notification hubs, and so on.
Great.
So lots of cool stuff there, improvements to Hadoop, and so on. So definitely check out Scott's post for the full details.
All right. I'm also going to ask you to go deep on this next one since it's in your ball court.
Yeah. Yeah. So new web features in VS 2013 update to CTP2. So you gotta love these titles. So there's just a number of features here. I won't go through all of them, but there's a number of things that you know we've been talking about before. So like improvements to scaffolding, improvements to the LESS editor. SAS editor improvements as well. So and these are ways that you're working basically with CSS files, a JSON project item and editor. So I can say add new item, JSON file, and actually get an editing experience with code folding as well, and type information as well.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool stuff on that front. So some of the Owen components that we've talked about before, new features for browser link, which is always great. So the ability for me to exchange information, a URL picker, which is kind of a simple thing. But if I'm in a Razor file and I want to say like image source equals, and you actually get a URL picker like based kind of on the context of your file.
That's nice.
So yeah, so I mean, it's like, there's a number of things that are just like handy that you'll use all the time.
I'm going to show my ignorance here. What are LESS and SAS pages?
So LESS and SAS are basically ways that you're going to compile on CSS. So if you want to like think about some of the things that people are doing with CSS, where you almost want to have variables.
Mm.
So CSS today, right now, is very declarative. So like if I have a style, my style's named Dan,
mm-hmm.
I have another one named Brian,
mm-hmm.
if I want both colors to be red, then I had to say Dan, the let's say it's a background color or something, would be red, or you know, FFF, or whatever the actual value is. And so that, what this allows you to do is actually get do things like declare it as a variable, and then you're saying at red.
So
right?
You can instantiate it at runtime? Is that
the idea? The underneath the covers, it does it, but it makes it so much easier for you to have one place to reference things that are used in multiple places. The idea of basically a variable, right? So
okay.
CSS doesn't have the equivalent of this, and there's a number of things here that it does for you to be cleaning up. So I'm kind of simplifying it, but that's kind of like a canonical example of one of the reasons why people like it. It does a number of things to help you use CSS. Well, and it doesn't do it in a way that ends up being kind of unique. Like, it's not its own implementation where somebody has to install something unique on their browser.
Oh, all right. Sounds good. So this next story is really talking about some of the improvements that the .NET Framework team has made in the way in which you as a developer can consume their sources. And so here what you see on the screen is just the new browser, the way that you can actually browse the code base and the assemblies and understand exactly what's in each of the different parts of the .NET Framework. The other thing that you should go check out on this post is that you know how you can step into source from the .NET Framework? Well, I don't know if you've ever noticed this. I've noticed that sometimes that doesn't work, and I never quite understood why.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is that when they published the .NET Framework source, what they did was they published the effectively RTM version of that source, and then when these updates come down with security hotfixes or whatever else, then the signatures no longer match correctly for the PDB files and what you're trying to step through with the code. And so what we find is that now you'll actually be able to step through into .NET Framework updates, and you'll be able to actually go through the code.
Love it.
And so that experience will continue to work. So just a really great way to improve the approach for you when you're trying to debug code that's not yours but has been included as part of the .NET Framework.
Yeah, and I think the other cool thing is if you haven't used this website, you absolutely should. If you type in information, like you can say like system.blah, and actually get IntelliSense, find mm-hmm. out where the references are, and find it and actually see some of the code stuff.
Great point.
So
yep.
Just a very, very cool experience. So another friend of the show, John Galloway.
Yes.
A number of cool things that he goes through, and this is part four, Web API Help Pages, BSON, binary JSON, like you may have JSON, the JavaScript Object Notation. This mm-hmm. is sort of the binary version as well, and global error handling. So just a couple of things that he can do around attribute routing and some of the new improvements for Web API, where it's basically self-documenting, right? Like he gives an example of, hey, let's declare an enum for a prefix for a person's name, whether it's Mr., Mrs., Lord, you know, that sort of thing.
You
lady.
Call me sir. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Thir. That's how I need to pronounce it. And you basically set this enum up, and you can actually get self-describing help pages that rather than you needing to describe, okay, you know, enum 0 is this, enum 1 is that, it'll actually do it automatically. So you just build your regular enum, and these self-describing help pages will build that out. So it's really almost like a reflection of the code for you and self-describing.
Like a chum file that it spits out, or?
If you remember ASP.NET, when we had ASMX files, web services, it was kind of that.
Sure.
That model of self-declarative.
Runtime generated, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
So like there's a method name, it has two inputs, mm-hmm. and you can actually use things like XML comments, which mm-hmm. John shows as well.
Yep.
So a number of cool things there. Other cool stuff is the comparison of BSON and JSON and when to use one versus the other. And he has mm-hmm. some things like, hey, if you're sending basically like binary data, like mm-hmm. use BSON. If you're sending text-heavy data, JSON's actually faster.
Mm.
And then the global error handling stuff, like, wow, if you really want to know the HTTP message lifecycle, mm-hmm. there's some cool stuff. And it's a lot more complex than I thought it was. It was this is like a nice if-then-else.
Right.
Cool stuff.
Sounds good. So this is just a really nice consolidated video that shows Joe Belfiore and Nick Parker talking about some of Microsoft's announcements coming out of this past week's Mobile World Congress. And so the key takeaway from this, it's a quick video if you want to watch it. It's about 10 or 12 minutes long. But the key takeaway for me was doubling down on our support for enterprise capabilities like enterprise Wi-Fi and VPN support, some of these things that
VPN
enterprise...
VPN is huge, yeah.
It is huge. And some of these things that that enterprises have told us are really important. Also, on the low end, it's making sure that we provide additional flexibility in the hardware specifications, which allows us to bring on more OEM partners. It also allows us to drive the device cost down while still maintaining device standards, so it's not the Wild West. So, you know, you as a developer know that this is the leeway that device manufacturers have, and I can go right to that. So one example is, they're removing the requirement to have a hardware camera button on the phone. Mm-hmm. So that adds expense to the device. Of course, you can do the same thing via software, and so now they're removing that requirement and making it optional. The other thing, which I had actually never even considered, but apparently a lot of people are asking for, is dual SIM support. So if you've got a SIM that you use maybe in the United States and you go travel and you go to Europe and you want to have a second SIM, or you know maybe one that your friends and family contact you on and another one that your business associates contact you on.
I know what you're getting
Brian.
Yes, right,
yes.
Business.
Impedance mismatch. So in any event, that is coming to Windows Phone, and you can look for more in the spring update is what they're calling it.
Fantastic. Which brings us to Picks of the
Week.
So, Brian, I got to break out of here and just kind of show some stats. These are super surprising to me. So what somebody did was looked at GitHub.
Yep.
Number of languages, JavaScript, Java, Python, Scala, Ruby, C#, PHP. And looked at what did the coding conventions people do? So you and I will set up coding conventions, but what is it actually used in the real world? Spaces over tabs for indentation.
That blows my mind. I do not agree with that. I'm a tabs guy all the way. I know
tabs
you're a tabs guy.
Guy
all the way.
Tabs guy.
So this was surprising to me. This article, by the way, was titled, you know, 9 areas where developers actually agree, and I think Dan and I are disagreeing with most of them. I think it should have been titled 9 things that developers actually do, but probably are wrong.
Yes.
Anyway.
This one I do agree with, which is no space between space on parentheses.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, no space.
Yep.
Comma first versus comma last. So the idea here is when you do comma...
Who does that?
The reason you do it is so that you could actually delete these two and your code is still legal. You delete this one and your code is still legal. So I've heard this is actually a nice convention. No one actually uses it. I do actually believe that this one would be a cool one because here, hey, you have an error because you have a comma.
Yeah, sure.
Here you have an error if you comma and, you know, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
Okay.
Casing, camel case. Now, this isn't that surprising because the reason why is if you start looking at the projects that are used, camel case is going to be the default for things like Java, JavaScript, and PHP.
Mm-hmm.
So no real surprise there. That's more a reflection of who are they measuring. Although, even though we're... Now, this one's crazy. This one, I actually think... I think this is Ullman style.
Okay.
Where you actually put brackets on its own. Versus a new line. I'm a new line guy. I'm in the minority.
Yeah, I tend to be a new line guy, but I have to say I'm not consistent there.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, sometimes it's okay. Single quotes versus double quotes. And I think, surprisingly, single quotes is more popular.
Doesn't it vary by language, though?
And this is, yeah.
Oh, this is just JavaScript. In JavaScript. Okay. Got
so,
it.
So lots of cool stuff. Definitely take a read. And
yes.
I think what we're learning is everyone is wrong and we're right.
Absolutely. Things will be different when we're running this place. And so my pick of the week, this is how to, if we can get back to the slides, Dan. You have one job on the show.
One.
All right. So my pick of the week, this is a great post by Gordon Beaming, friend of the show. And he goes through and he just recently installed TFS 2013 Update 2, like the day that it came out. And he goes through and he shows some of the nice improvements that you can put together as a TFS administrator to create really rich, beautiful dashboards for your team. And so I mentioned earlier, you can now pin these work item charts and graphs, and you can see that down here. He also has some tips and tricks that talk about, like, hey, if you pin a chart, then it actually, the flow layout doesn't work correctly when you have tiles on the same line. And so he makes some recommendations for how to make that look nice. So this is something that he actually sent me some feedback and said, hey, we should fix that in the product. Turns out we already knew about that. And I said, hey, while you're at it, why don't you go explain to people how you work around this capability to make it look really nice. So just another way that you can, as a TFS administrator, make things look just like you expect them on Visual Studio Online.
And to be clear, TFS 13 Update 2 for these.
Yes, that is correct. This is brand new in Update 2, although it's been on Visual Studio Online for a few months now.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Great. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.